from suffering to love. Your teachers were Alexander Smith, Punjaji and Shanti Mai, two men and a woman. Do men and women have a different way of teaching? For many decades, I met numerous masters from all over the world. And wherever I went, there was a distinct, unique atmosphere and way of behaving. In the gatherings, different issues were stressed and sometimes codes of behavior could be strict. I remember the first time I came to India. I traveled directly to Tiruvannamalai, to the ashram of Ramana Maharshi. On arrival, I was very tired and I went to the kitchen to ask for something to drink. Before I could even open my mouth, I was chased out like a dog. I didn't have the faintest idea of the code of conduct in an Indian ashram and made blunder after blunder. So I learned through the strict hand of rejection, through being vigilant and imitating their ways. A whole world opened up to me of removing my shoes, of sitting on the floor, and of where sitting was even allowed. And I developed ever-growing insight into the many ways of greeting and bowing. Many years later, I was in satsang with Papaji in Lucknow. Here, the atmosphere was joyful and easygoing. People walked in and out of the hall during satsang, and you could lie on the floor or listen to music through your earphones. Wherever I was with the masters, there were great differences in both form and content. That has nothing to do with being a man or a woman, but with culture, the master's character, and sometimes with the setting the master has matured in themselves. That served as an example for them. Guru, mastery of truth, is a neutral principle, free of gender. What struck you most in Alexander Smith's approach? When I met Alexander in the early 80s, I was thrilled by his directness. All I wanted was essence, and that was what I got with his Advaita Vedanta teaching. I had already discovered that true happiness could only be found by realizing absolute freedom, and I knew straight away I was in the right place. What I could not stand was that immediacy could not be realized immediately. I was passionate, desperate, and impatient, and did not want to allow any process or time in my awakening. It was going to take years, many years, for this impetuosity to purify and mature into timeless patience. Alexander was so clear and so knowledgeable. Sitting at his feet, I drenched myself. For 10 years, I never missed a satsang. His sharpness, his humour, his love, his bluntness. I did not care what happened. I was ready to take in everything to free myself of the painful and isolating sense of I. All that happened just fell into the fire of my longing. His words etched themselves in my heart, and little by little, great insights broke through. And how was it for you being with Shanti Mai? When I met Shanti Mai, I had been receiving the teachings for many years and had read countless non-dual scriptures and books. I knew it all, but realized that awakening had not yet taken place. Shanti Mai's expression and ambience had a more Indian flavor. Here I met with mantras, singing and ceremony, about which I, with a thorough Advaita training, had quite some judgments. It took a while before I could connect with their depth and beauty. The satsangs that for so many years had set me alight and had given me so many wonderful and confounding insights. Those satsangs had become boring to me. I knew the words so well. If I had met Shanti Mai without the great knowledge I had received from Alexander, then of course I would have deeply absorbed the verbal teachings from her. But now something else had to awaken in me, something much more subtle than knowledge. I learnt to listen to the language of silence in and behind the words. Silent and receptive, I merged with the field of the Satya lineage. For most of the day, as well as during satsang, I was in deep meditation. It is hard to say what struck me particularly in the different approaches. From Alexander, I received the spiritual knowledge and the great nothing. With Shanti, my inner journey came to completion. All knowledge and all insight are raised in the embodiment of everything. Over the years, my being had simply been moulded by what was happening in the intimate contact with masters. However, for a long time, I cherished the idea that I needed a serene atmosphere of silence and harmony around my guru. But I never got it. What I discovered was much more precious. Freedom from conditions, freedom from ideas and expectations. I found out that it does not matter at all what goes on in the vicinity of a guru. I myself had chosen for this togetherness, drawn on by an intense longing, great self-confidence, and a fundamental trust. And then, whatever happens, happens. It was up to me, in the fire of this delicate bond, to lay down resistance, comment, and expectations. Why do you say fire? The desire to awaken is a fire of longing, burning in your heart. In the sphere of the Master, light is thrown into you and this inner fire flares up. Thus, all illusion is burned and your being becomes purified, emptied and available. Navigating by the compass of truth, empowered and inspired by the Master, a life of service emerges, in which all demand for being cherished has been laid down. What do you mean by being cherished? Look how we want to be reassured all the time, how much we want confirmation and are craving for recognition and love. Such reassurances may give us a sense of security, but pacify a profound feeling of helplessness. You know, it is so wonderful. Words can veil and also reveal, as in the enlightened speech of the masters. Empowered by their words, your need to be cherished thaws. You courageously dare to see what is and direct your course to truth. Truth liberates. Truth liberates from craving and delusion. And so your life comes to acceptance, to full acceptance and surrender. How then do you surrender? Give up all expectation. Give up all longing. Give up all knowing. And stop defining and locating yourself. So I can reach enlightenment like this. Don't make ideas about enlightenment. You can't reach an idea. All ideas about awakening are a veiling of what you are now. Then what works? You as a person want to be enlightened. But when the light breaks through, the delusion of your individual existence stops. The price you must pay for freedom is the end of you, the end of the person who wants to be awakened. In the end, everything is so empty. Yes, and with every conclusion you uphold the denial of your freedom. In subtle ways, you avoid the intimacy and the immediacy of direct experience. Be still, and you will see this yourself. I want to experience the true self. The absolute cannot be experienced. It cannot know itself. Knowledge belongs to the realm of I am-ness, the domain of duality. You call your gatherings meeting in the heart. Does that mean that you go more into feeling than into understanding and insight? I recall people's attention to who they really are. I direct them inward. The heart is a symbol for that. The heart knows neither comparison nor suffering. Peace abides in the heart. One abides in the heart. Here you cannot find other. Here you cannot find two. And eventually, you cannot even find one. My teaching is not pure Advaita Vedanta, but more universally non-dual. Actually, the word teaching does not really apply. The master holds up a mirror that reflects the inner guru, abiding in your heart. This mirror shows what may be hidden. It repeatedly makes the veiled and denied aspects of life visible, in a continuous encouragement and appeal towards the realization of totality. Feeling and thinking keep their places. But in the total relaxation of awakening and with the fully embraced insight that all thoughts are illusionary, they no longer have a dominance over you. Feelings too lose their power, as you no longer need to shield yourself from them. They are simply experienced directly, and within that experience, they disperse. The path is entirely unique for each of us, but masculine and feminine qualities awaken in everybody. A clear mind warms the heart, and a warm heart will clarify the mind. There is no jnani without an inner bhakta, and every bhakta is a jnani waking up. Wisdom and love are one. Awakening is total. Is meditation necessary? That rather depends. I look at what might be the best medicine for somebody at this particular moment. To those who are very active, I suggest putting down everything for 1 minute every hour. Just stop for one moment. This works miracles. It breaks the rush. It breaks the stream of thoughts. 1 moment of self-reflection. Many times a day. Often, I meet people who tell me that they have been meditating for several decades and have become extremely frustrated. I ask them to simply lay it down. That baffles them, but soon after they are quite relieved. I challenge them to live life as awareness, just being aware, washing the dishes with their children during work. A deep relaxation comes into their lives, where spiritual expectations evaporate in the simplicity of everyday life. Life begins to vibrate in the immediacy of this awareness and becomes more and more free from ideas about awakening. Precisely in the cessation of needing to make anything happen, a profound rest sets in. And life itself becomes meditation. And then, a yearning arises to sit and be immersed in the silence of the heart. Then meditation becomes very natural, as golden blissful moments of inwardness. What exactly do you mean by enlightenment? Enlightenment is extinction. The extinction of longing for liberation, of lack and suffering, of resistance and splitting judgments. Your being opens and falls in deep rest. Life is lived, no longer as an imagined person, but as life itself. Very common, very natural, very fulfilled. Some have an experience of oneness and believe that is awakening. It is more like peeking into God's kitchen. Over time, life will show you how singular and transparent your sight is and how light your life. Often such a glorious experience is a new beginning, after which follows a long period of purification and stilling. Would you elaborate further about male or female gurus? I've never seen my masters as men or women. I've never seen spiritual paths as masculine or feminine. For me, there is no such thing as male or female spirituality. Also, I do not see any difference in the social possibilities for men and women. But you know, this is easy for me to say. I come from a family where as early as the beginning of the 20th century, the women went to university. In our family, boys and girls had the same upbringing and education. The entire feminist movement was therefore completely foreign to me. I am aware that this has been an exceptional privilege. I'm aware that in many traditions, cultures, and families, there is a prevailing difference between men and women. But since we are talking about the difference between men and women, I would like to make a plea for feminine qualities. These days, when all over the world we reap the bitter fruits of greed and exploitation, it seems to me of crucial importance that we all, men and women, move from grabbing to giving. For too long, the very foundation of life has been interfered with and jeopardized. We all live together on this wonderful, precious earth. We can no longer continue to abuse her, the animals, each other, and ourselves. Now, more than ever, this feminine sense of connectedness and care, which is present in the body of any gender, is very much needed. Let us honour her, the spirit of woman, giver and guardian of life. I hear you say this, but isn't life an illusion? Life is neither true nor untrue. All experiences are true in the context of time and space. Essentially, existence is a hologram, empty of reality and substance. It is a dream. However, many masters offer a helping hand to all who want to turn their life from suffering to love. In the Satya lineage, this has been a mission for centuries, calling upon all of humanity to no longer entertain ideas of separation, but to come to realize undividable one. This intention is free from expectation and rooted in the realization of God's perfection. I find this very touching, and I would like to call upon everybody to live as a beacon of light in our extraordinary, beautiful world.